Ebenezer McCoy, one of the most dangerous wizards in the world, a man of such personal and political power that she would never have been able to take him down directly. So she had set out to strike at him through his bloodline, from him to my mother, from her to me, from me to Maggie. Kill the child and kill us all. That's what Ariana had meant when she said it wasn't about me. It was about my grandfather. Suddenly, it made sense that the old man had put his life on the line by declaring himself my mentor when the council would have killed me for slaying Justin de Morne. Suddenly, it made sense why he had been so patient with me, so considerate, so kind. It hadn't just been an act of random kindness. And suddenly it made sense why he would barely ever speak of his apprentice, Margaret Le Fay, a name she'd earned for herself when her birth certificate must have read Margaret McCoy. Hell, for that matter, he probably never told the council that Margaret was his daughter. I sure as hell had no intentions of letting them know about Maggie if I got her out of this mess. My mother had eventually been killed by enemies she had made, and Ebenezer, her father, the most dangerous man on the White Council, had not been there to save her. The circumstances wouldn't matter. No matter what he'd accomplished, I knew the old man would never forgive himself for not saving his daughter's life, any more than I would if I failed Maggie. It was why he had made a statement, a demonstration of what would happen to those who came at me with a personal vengeance. He was trying, preemptively, to save his grandson. And it explained why he had changed the Grey Council's focus and led them here. He had tried to save me, and to save my little girl. And, some cynical portion of me added, himself. Though I wasn't even sure that would be a conscious thought on his part, underneath the mountain of issues he had accrued. No wonder Ariana had been so hot and bothered to use the bloodline curse, starting with Maggie. She'd avenge herself upon me, who hadn't had the good grace to die in a duel, and upon Ebenezer, who had simply killed Ortega as you would a dangerous animal, a workaday murder performed with expedience and an extremely high profile. Ariana must have lost a lot of face in the wake of that, and my ongoing exploits against the Reds and their allies would only have made her more determined to show me my place. With a single curse, she'd kill one of the senior council and the Black Staff all at once. My death would be something to crow about, too, since, as Ariana herself had noted, no one had pulled it off yet, and I felt I could confidently lay claim to the title of most infamous warden on the council after Donald Morgan's death. For Ariana, what a coup, and after that, presumably, a coup. Of course, if the Red King was holding the knife, he got the best of all worlds. Dead enemies, more prestige, and a more secure throne. No brainer. He took the knife from my belt, smiling, and turned toward the altar. And my daughter. Dear God, I thought. Think, Dresden, think! One day, I hope God will forgive me for giving birth to the idea that came next. Because I never will. I knew how angry she was. I knew how afraid she was. Her child was about to die only inches beyond her reach, and what I did to her was as good as murder. I focused my thoughts and sent them to Susan. Susan, think! Who knew who the baby's father was? Who could have told them? Her lips peeled away from her teeth. His knife can't hurt you, I thought, though I knew damn well that no fairy magic could blithely ignore the touch of steel. Martin, Susan said, her voice low and very quiet, did you tell them about Maggie? He closed his eyes, but his voice was steady. Yes. Susan Rodriguez lost her mind. One instant she was a prisoner, and the next she had twisted like an eel, too swiftly to be easily seen. Martin's machete opened up a long cut on her throat, but she paid as little attention to it as a thorn scratch gained while hiking. Martin raised a hand to block the strike he thought was coming, and it was useless because Susan didn't go after him swinging. Instead, her eyes full of darkness and rage, her mouth opened in a scream that showed her extended fangs. She went for his throat. Martin's eyes were on mine for a fraction of a second, no more, but I felt the soul gaze begin. I saw his agony, the pain of the mortal life he had lost. I saw his years of service, his genuine devotion, like a marble statue of the Red King, kept polished and lovingly tended. And I saw his soul change. I saw that image of worship grow tarnished as he spent year after year among those who struggled against the Red King and his empire of terror and misery. And I saw that when he had come into the temple, he knew full well that he wasn't going to survive, and that he was content with it. There was nothing I could do in time to prevent what was coming next, and I wasn't sure I wanted to. Martin said that it had taken him years and years to run a con on the Fellowship of St. Giles, but it had taken him most of 2 centuries to run the long con on the Red King. As a former priest, Martin must have known of the bloodline curse and its potential for destruction. He must have known that the threat to Maggie and the realization of his betrayal would be certain to drive Susan out of control. He told me already, practically the moment he had come to Chicago, that he would do anything if it meant damaging the Red Court. He would have shot me in the back. He would have betrayed Maggie's existence, practically handing her to the murderous creatures of the Red Court. He would betray the Fellowship to its enemies. He would destroy Susan, and he would die himself. Everything he had done, I realized, he had done for one reason: to be sure that I was standing here when it happened, to give me a chance to change everything. Susan rode him to the stone floor, berserk with terror and rage, and tore out his throat, ripping mouthful after mouthful of flesh from his neck with supernatural speed. Martin died. Susan began to turn, and that was my moment. I flung myself against the wills of the Lords of Outer Night with everything in my body, my heart, my mind. I hurled my fear and my loneliness, my love and my respect, my rage and my pain. I made of my thoughts a hammer, infused with the fires of creation and tempered in the icy power of the darkest guardian the earth had ever known. I raised my arms with a scream of defiance, bringing as much of the armor as I could between my head and theirs, and wished for a fleeting second that I had just worn the stupid hat. And I threw it all at the second lord from the left, the one whose will seemed the least concrete. He staggered and made a sound that I'd once heard from a boxer who'd taken an uppercut to the nuts.